Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Everything Is Time podcast. My name is Jeremy.
My name is Ruby.
Season 3, episode 3.
Staying on track.
Well, for context for people that are listening, this is take 2.
Right. Take 2. Mm-hmm. But we're still just as happy to be here as we were the first time an hour ago.
Right. Take 2, but we are thriving and we are surviving. We just have to regroup. Restructure, girl boss our way back to the beginning.
Right. My memoir.
Right. Yeah. Great. Ruby, girl bossing from the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's what you can feature. I'll give you a chapter.
Yeah. Well, I guess this kind of ties in with your memoir in that I guess.
Wait, like, I have questions already about this. I know you're going on an inspirational rant, but can I interrupt you? So are you telling me that if you like had a memoir, that that's how it would be, that you would like designate like a chapter for each friend? Because I would love that.
I don't know if I have enough close friends to have that many chapters. I will say maybe it's based off of my speech at graduation, where apparently I went down and talked about a little bit about each person. Which, fun fact, some tea for people, the other person who gave a speech cornered me a week before and was like, we shouldn't talk about other people in our speeches. I told you this, right?
Yeah, as if people, if that wasn't like a thing people specifically did in the speech, like you were supposed to do it.
He or she or they, whoever this may be, referenced that it is something that people normally do, but thought it was dumb and didn't want to do it.
I'm just saying that Jeremy's speech was the fan favorite, despite him not remembering it and walking around the after party like a zombie. People were genuinely like, my dad was hunting him down in the gym. Like, congratulations, Ruby, where's Jeremy? I could tell him his speech was great. And so he was like walking around trying to find you. And you were just kind of like really eyes glazed over with a piece of like lemon cake in your hand, walking around being like, thank you. Thank you.
I don't know.
It was nice, though.
I'm happy it was nice. I wish I had active memory of it.
I do have like a letter where you actively say at the bottom, like, I'm supposed to be writing my speech right now, but instead I'm writing this.
Oh, it was bad. I didn't have a speech.
Like the night before. And you were just like, I'm just going to make it up. Like, I'm just going to do something. It's going to be fine. And it was like, okay.
It was just a confluence of not great things. And in hindsight, I guess I'm thankful I was semi-drugged up in the sense that I really wasn't nervous in the normal way that you feel anxiety before a speech, like what you're going to say. It was more so, am I going to be standing upright the whole time?
I mean, you just seemed like you were there. It was kind of like you were an autopilot. And so there wasn't a whole lot of emotion going. You were just like glazed over look. You were like an autopilot almost. And you did your speech and it was great. But like, I don't think anybody who maybe wasn't in your friend circle would have noticed that this was very much autopilot.
So you're speaking of friend circles. In your time as a young person going to different schools of various sizes, how was that for you in terms of choosing people? And in hindsight, what do you notice about the friend groups that you did have?
It's interesting because my friend groups, I look back at and I'm always kind of like, how did this become a thing? And sometimes I remember it vividly. Like a lot of times my friends were extroverted people who would come up to me first and make friends with me first because I was more introverted. So I didn't really go up to people. So I like remember that one of the first friends I made in second grade was someone who actively came up to me, sat next to me and was like, I'm your friend now. And they were for like years of my life. And I kind of just like merged into their friend group and it all became a friend group. And I just had all of my friends, especially my best friends when I was younger, were extroverts.
Interesting. So was I one of your first semi-introverted people? Was I breaking the mold?
I actually went up to Jeremy and I was like, hey. What did I say to you? I was like, hey.
Sit next to me. To be totally honest, I don't remember the first conversation. All I remember is that we ended up sitting next to each other in science, and thank God we did.
I remember us sitting next to each other in science class, and then all of a sudden, every single class, we were just like together.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. You had other friends that were there before me, so I don't know why you didn't. In hindsight, those were not necessarily the most studious people in the world, I guess.
You kind of merged into our group, though. It's not on the side and then I had my group of friends. It was like you were in our group at that point.
I was, yeah. No, that was me trying to pretend like I wasn't in your group. No, I was in that group. That is true.
He definitely was. He contributed a lot to that group. But wow. I mean, he was giving main character energy. But we literally we did a lot of things together. I feel like all my memories after that were like somehow in every single class, we were next to each other. And I think that was because if we were given the choice, we'd sit next to each other. But if they put us alphabetically, it also didn't work for them either because we were still next to each other. So yeah, that worked out in our favor a lot.
That's true. That's interesting because I don't remember choosing the other people in that group to be friends.
He gave me a treaty. I was like, yes.
Yeah, it was very much like a package deal with you and your friends, which I guess oftentimes happens in that you join a friend group.
Right. Definitely, because you were also friends with them. It wasn't just like you were friends with me.
That's true.
You were friends with them. Do you think you choose your friends or do you think it's more like, part of me just thinks it's honestly, when you're in that kind of setting, when you're young, when there's not a lot of people around, I think it's just survival. It's like, oh, okay, there's only 20 people and like these people are the ones that are actively talking to me and wanting to be my friends. I'm going to be friends with them because I didn't really have that much in common with my friends. I mean, like some things here and there, like movies or books. But in terms of personality, we all kind of, it was like a gradual thing. Like we had different personalities and the more you hang out with them, the more you begin to see, okay, we're all kind of merging into like the same person.
You were very different than those other people that were in that group, but like there were some connections in terms of humor and things like that.
Right. I'm not saying that there wasn't. I'm not saying that all they did was talk to me and I was like, oh, they're talking to me. Let's be friends. I mean, like I said, we had things in common, like books and movies and things we would talk about.
Yeah.
But when I was younger, I think there was a lot more differences. And then over the years, we all just kind of became more like in sync with one another to where like our humor was matching up more. We finally when you get to know someone, you get in like a rhythm with them to where it's like your personalities sync up and it's just like a very enjoyable thing then. It's not as awkward. Like in the first stages, it's more awkward because you're feeling it out. But when you're like really comfortable with someone, it's like, okay, this is pretty
good. But I don't know if that is viewing the situation from today's lens because I don't remember it being super awkward in those early stages in like fifth or sixth grade. At least for me, like when you're earlier on in life, you're in that process of always kind of meeting new people. You're with the people that you didn't necessarily choose to be, but you're there and you make the best of it. In a school environment, my choices are to be miserable and not talk to anybody or to be friends with as many people as I can in this environment that we're all forced to be in 8 hours a day. I think it's a different deal.
I don't know. I mean, time-wise, yeah, because you're seeing them every single day. But I am feel more comfortable in a group of strangers now than I did in like sixth grade.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a different situation. I don't want to say that it would be easier or harder for me. I don't think they're the same.
I have no idea where you're going with this. All I'm saying is that like, the only claim I'm making is that as you get older, you can either become more social or less social and that affects how you make friends.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
In a very surface level thing, I can say it's easier or it's harder for me now to make friends than it was at 12. But I don't think it's necessarily a one factor system. There are lots of different things that contribute to that ability to be social or the ability to make friends. One of which is the environment that you're normally in. At least for me, when I was 12, there weren't tons of environments where you didn't have an obligation to see people for long periods of time. And you had enough free will and independence to where you could leave situations that didn't exist. So you could make friends easier, but you also were in an environment where all the incentives and all the structure was built to build bonds quickly. As an adult, that's not really the case.
We're talking about two separate things here. I'm not at all talking about what you're talking about.
I think you can't separate them.
Well, I do. So, I mean... This is a bad example of this whole situation. But yeah,
sorry, y'all. We were in a debate, but we don't know what sides we're on. It's super
right.
Great.
Normally you guys are used to seeing us on the same page, the same person, but here we're two very distinctly different people on this topic. I think that is honestly though, like friendship has always been something that I think you and I have very different views of.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
I just think that every time whenever we get into conversations about friendship, we end up at like two separate ends where both of us are like, what is the other person talking? This is a great example of that. Like when Jeremy and I have conversations that deal with friendship, I think it just becomes more obvious how vastly different we operate within friendships, which is insane because most of the other things that we talk about, especially on the podcast, we're like on the same page. Which is a little concerning because I love that we're on the same page about like Dr. Goldfoot, but like not friendship.
Well, what does that mean that we're not on the same page in terms of friendship?
Not that we're not on the same page, but I'm saying that like we have very different views of it and different ways of operating through it. So when we have conversations about it, sometimes we end up like this one where I have no idea what you were really trying to say. I still don't really understand what you said. Like it's okay. Fine, like it wasn't a bad thing or a good thing. I just like am sitting there kind of like, you know that meme with the person with all the calculations around their head?
I do know the meme. Yeah,
that's kind of me.
I don't know if we view friendship that differently, because you're so far your explanation for we view friendship differently is just repeating the phrase we view friendship differently but with different
I'm sorry nouns have you not verbs. Been have you not seen I mean, you've been part of the other conversations we've had about friendship, and we always end up being kind of like,
Right. Well, then if that's true, we should have tangible ways in which we view friendship differently.
I think that you view it, well, first off, you don't the thing is, it's so different in our head. Like, I have like a very structured view of friendship, and he has a very loose view of friendship. So that is kind of this foundation for both of us. And so I think part of the reason why I do not understand it when you talk about friendship is because fundamentally that is not how it's set up in my mind. So I have no idea what you mean. Like to me, it's very categorized. And for you, it's like, you know, all the friends I've known are just in one group and these are my friends. And to me, that makes absolutely no sense. But, you know, we just view it very differently.
I genuinely, the concept of a best friend, I understand that that's something that people easily label when they have it, but I also don't really get it.
I don't know how you don't get it.
It's a superlative.
Like, how can you label just a single person something? And I think it's also because you tend to be somebody who... Never mind.
But go I mean, for it. I go for that, it. Like, rip me to shreds.
I love where this... We went from like, hey, what's a fun magic school has field trip?
I do think you tend to categorize friends more than I do.
I do.
It's weird because... I don't know if I have a very binary view of this person is my friend or they're not my friend, and therefore that dictates my interactions, or people are all just on this scale of how much I like them, I guess, and there are no particular barriers as to when someone becomes a friend or enters a new level of friendship. They're just kind of somewhere
like
on the scale.
All the way at the end, can they just like, do they move up daily or move different places daily? Or is it pretty stationary? Like, depending on the day, are they somewhere else on the scale?
I suppose. And that you can be annoyed with someone and move on the scale.
Jeremy's claim like 30 minutes ago was we do not have different views of friendship. I have literally, okay, keep going. So right now I'm picturing the little like picto chat. Like little art gradient, like Jeremy's friends.
Like, no. So it's just a scatter plot of people from dislike to like. If that's the one that is accurate, and I'm not sure, I go back and forth. If that's the one that's accurate, then in theory, you could have a cluster of everyone that you know and interact with on a daily basis, all towards the dislike end. Like you may have no one in your life that you really, really like. And that's true of me. Like at points in my life, there were times when there weren't tons of people who I really liked.
Jeremy, like, really? You're actually at the far end. He's like, I have no one in my life. Let me just tell the podcast. No one in my life currently that I actually like.
So. No. But say that that's true. I think this actually supports the whole you can make friends in an environment where you don't like the people. Like if everyone is clustered towards one end of that graph, you sort of just pick from the upper end of the people you don't like. that's who you may choose.
It's weird because you say I give really vague answers, but when it comes to topics like these, you give very vague answers and I give very specific answers.
That's true.
Like, you give, like, the most vague sentence, like, Tumblr post thing. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. And I will give you, like, metrics for people.
Well, then how do you view it?
You know how I view friendship.
Well, the audience might not. Like, you know. Not everyone knows everything that passes through your mind. Believe it or not, Ruby.
Read my mind, audience. I'm, like, the way I view friendship is very much, like, God, I hate that you got, like, the circles. Like, it's a Venn diagram. It's not a Venn diagram. But I view, like, acquaintances, then you have friends, and then, like, your close inner circle of friends. Like, those three levels, if you will, are, like, circles within each other. So it's, like, acquaintances, friends, and then, like, your close inner circle of friends. And I categorize people a lot more. Like I know who, like, my acquaintances are, my friends are, and who my close friends are. There's, like, no question in my mind. Really. I never sit there and think, where are they today? On my, like, friendship thing. I always pretty much know. Because otherwise I wouldn't know how to interact with them, really. Because there's information I'm not going to give to acquaintances that I would give to, like, close friends. I think it would make it way harder to operate in friendships if I did not know where they were and they could move each day. Like, that would be so stressful for me. But I also trust people a lot more than you. Like, you I just do. And so people that I mean, because it's not like yours where they move depending on what they do, I put a lot of faith in the fact that these people are labeled this for me. And so therefore, I give them a lot more leeway to screw up.
That's really interesting. Because I was wondering, because I was talking with a different friend about, because my other friend really views people's actions as the paramount thing in determining if they're a good or a bad person. And I tend to be making arguments a lot of the times about trying to look for intent. So if someone screws up, maybe they didn't mean to screw up. So I think it's interesting that I care a lot about intent, but I do think you're right. I offer less leeway than you do in terms of screwing up.
Well, I think it's easier to offer less leeway when you don't label them, because there is no, like, when I label somebody, it's like a personal thing. It's like, this person is this now. For you, if anybody can be on that, like, spectrum of whatever that was, like, then it's going to be a lot easier for you not to give them leeway, because you're like, well, they're not really, like, this or that. They're neither here nor there. Whereas, like, for me, it's like, well, they're my friend. And so as my friend, this is what I should do in this situation. So it's a lot easier for me, like, I need to give leeway, versus, like, an acquaintance where it's like, well, I mean, I don't really know them that well. I think it's easier for me to operate in friendships where I know exactly where I stand with them. I have to know where I stand with people in, like, relationships. I hate people that, well, I don't hate people. Wow. I really dislike people. They're like, have kind of this outlook. You're great, Jeremy. You're one of my favorite people. But I mean, like, people have this kind of outlook where they're just like, they can't ever answer me as to, like, where exactly do you see this friendship going? Like, is this progress? Is this not, like, I don't understand what the point of that is. Like, it's really difficult for me to be friends with those types of people, because it's like, if one day I'm here on the scale or one day I'm there, like, what exactly does that make me? Like, there's no, like, linear progression of things. Like, normally in a friendship, you would think it'd be like, you get to know somebody and you'd, like, move up and be, like, closer to them. And eventually that would be heading towards a destination of progress. With people who view it like that,
I think that's a bold claim.
I'm saying ideally in a friendship, like, you get to know somebody and you work your way towards that.
Those are a lot of assumptions, though. I think the problem with your model is that you trust people so much that as you get to know people more, there isn't the option that they can go lower on your scale.
I have a hard time putting people lower on that scale. I know I do. Once they're, like, at a certain level, I'm very hesitant to really kick them out.
Yeah, I mean, I could answer that question that you pose, whether or not there's progress being made in a friendship. I don't think that'd be difficult for me to answer, but I do think, yeah, there's a situation where getting to know someone, for me, moves them lower on that spectrum of how much I enjoy them.
I mean, but the way you get to know someone, like, you consider more things than I consider, just in general. Like, people's words, I think, mean a lot more to me than you place on that. And so, you know, it's just very, the way we kind of vet people are not the same at all.
It is not the same
either. That's what I'm saying. Like when you said like a while ago, oh, we like act the same way in friendship. We fundamentally do not. In like almost every facet of friendship, we are different. The way we like make friends, the way we like place them in our head. I think that like we, some of like the like, a lot of our misunderstandings where we were like very upset with each other were friendship conversations. They were 1,000%. They all boiled down to that. And I think it's because we fundamentally do not understand each other's way of friendship because it just does not compute in our heads. I think some parts do. Like, it makes sense that you view it that way because I know you and I understand that that's how you view it. But just because I understand that's how you view it does not necessarily make it make sense in my mind. Like, it does not make sense to me how people, like, can't, like, don't label. Like, that sounds really bad, but, like, I need to know, like, who are my friends? Who are my close friends? Who are my acquaintances? Like, I think that there is a lot less security in those types of, I mean, I'm not saying there is a lot less security. Wow. I'm saying that, like, if somebody was, like, to view friendship how I view it, they would view that as there being just, like, a very kind of, like, loose definition of it, and therefore there's less security in that model of friendship. Thank you for listening to our TED Talk. Our TED Talk is just us arguing on stage for 50 minutes and then us being like, thank you.
We're besties.
We're also the same person. Don't forget.
Yeah. Buy the merch.
BOGO.
Right. Oops. Yeah, but a true statement I would say is that you're always looking for a group of friends like those in our movie that we're reviewing this week.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're always looking for friends to just go on chaotic adventures with you through time-space continuums.
Yeah, regardless of how you rate your friends or view them.
But exactly. Speaking of ratings, this movie got a 3.8 out of 10 on IMDb. So Jeremy and I were like, oh my gosh, a movie for us.
Yeah.
This is Jeremy's pick. May I just say?
This is my pick. Loud and clear. I liked this movie. It's a bad
Literally
movie.
Literally like, I hate that. You know what? This is also like a pet peeve of mine because any bad movie I pick is just bad, bad. But any bad movie he picks, he's like, well, you know, I actually kind of like it, like a little bit, like it's quirky. And I'm like,
No. I will say A World Away, which is the movie we're talking about. It functionally is a terrible movie. It's funny in parts because the CGI is wild. It's like if a middle school wanted to make a movie that was sci-fi, but also it had the dad from Wizards of Waverly Place.
Yeah, David DeLuise, interesting project for him. It also had the girl from Girl Meets World.
Like, why though? This seemed like a very indie budget Christian-esque film that was also sci-fi.
Well, I'm Googling it because I just saw the director is Mark Blanchard.
Okay.
And it also says that, like, the girl in this movie was a Rowan Blanchard. So I'm wondering if it's like her dad produced this and that's why she was in it. So I don't really know, but like maybe that's what happened because it was like, it wasn't even green screen. They didn't even green screen. They just like Project FX. They were like, this is it. Special effects. The premises, I think, were wild because the green screen was not great. Very Star Trek reference, which I don't understand why that was in there when kids are not going to get the Star Trek reference.
Well, kids better get the Star Trek reference. Star Trek is great. I will say the movie at minute 2 is very different than the movie at minute 15 because it opens with an intergalactic chase scene of one group in a spaceship that has a special substance and they're trying to keep it away from another group. And then they throw the substance onto or into the Earth. Like, that is the first part of the movie. It opens and it's a chase scene and you're like, what is happening? And then it pans to a montage of this crystal or whatever it was in various historical civilizations, like the Egyptians. That's what was right after the whole chase scene, with the opening credits where you saw this like crystal in all of the major civilizations across time. So you're like, okay, so Star Trek dropped off crystal on Earth, which then the one crystal somehow made it to all the civilizations. Don't know how that happened, because it was like one consolidated thing when it went to Earth. And I guess helped them throughout time?
I don't know what happened because I don't remember. But I mean,
that is like, what happened. That is how the movie went.
Well, yeah, but I remember what happened after that, because at one point then it picks up on this grandmother and these two siblings who are arguing, and then she's getting picked on at school, and the brothers like get over it essentially. Yeah. And then they're fighting, as I guess siblings do, and they're Wouldn't sitting on know. The weirdest couch. Like the yeah. weirdest couch.
It was really like they took two IKEA cushions and just kind of duct taped them together, called it a couch. It was weird.
And then, like, this woman is like, let me read you guys a story. Mm-hmm. And so she reads them a story, and it starts going into it. It's a story within a story.
It is.
And it starts out with, like, this dad and daughter, and their mom died. The mom died from, like, cancer. And mm-hmm. then the daughter just wants to go to, like, a normal school because she's, like, a horse girl that's homeschooled.
Yeah, that was it was weird how they really leaned into the trope of horse girl. That's not something I'd really seen explored in a movie ever.
I mean, there's like this genre of like horse girl movies where it's like about a girl and her horse, but the thing is that
that's different though. That's a little different.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that that's what it's like started to be at the beginning, but it was confusing because it didn't make sense in this movie. It didn't further the plot. It made literally no sense, besides maybe they're trying to be like, this is why she lives on a ranch in the middle of nowhere. That didn't make sense either, because her dad literally was a teacher that probably commuted, what, like 20 minutes away? So she could have gone to school.
The dad was like a rich CEO situation, I think.
I thought he was a teacher. Isn't that why he took them on the field trip? Because he's their teacher?
I think he took them on the field trip because he was the parent of that person, and then like, how would a teacher be able to afford the spaceship?
I don't know. But, like, what do you mean he was the parent of that person?
I don't know.
He only had one daughter.
He had one daughter who didn't go to the school, but then he went to the school and did, like, a raffle situation where people from the school, also including his daughter who didn't go to the school, got to go on a field trip where they flew on his private jet to the Grand Canyon, or into the Grand Canyon was the verbiage. Which I don't know how that works.
Just nosedive. And it's like CGI plane in the driveway, but that happened.
No.
These kids are also supposed to be like in eighth grade, and then I guess his daughter's in. Oh no! The kids are supposed to be in high school. I don't know.
It's unclear, because there was the one kid who looked like 18, and then there were some kids who looked 12 or 13, but they were all pulled from the same auditorium, so presumably they're kind of close in age.
Right, and
yeah,
obviously they went off big basic stereotypes like. The cool guy, the girl yeah. who's like super into herself, and then like mm-hmm. the nerd.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just like a lot of stereotypes, and then they all get into a plane. And first off, giant air quotes, plane, like a plane set, like an Instagrammable yeah. hipster, but make it like private jet. That's yep. what this was.
Very bad.
For like a dad who's so protective of his daughter, I love how he lets her sit like front seat in this plane. It's like she wanted to sit in the back, but yeah. no, you're just going to have her right there. Like, okay, go off, I guess.
Yeah, she was his co-pilot. Well, I guess she wanted, right. maybe, I don't remember, was it established she wanted to sit in the back, or she just wanted to hang out with
her
dad?
Yeah, she wanted to sit by this other kid. That way she could make friends. Because her whole thing is, hey, I want to go and make friends. And he's like, right. no. And so then, like, you know, she sits up there, and then she's sitting up there, just kind of looking out the window. But then the way that they shot this, you could just tell it wasn't a plane, because there's like no door.
I appreciate it. At least they went to the effort of, especially when they were in the air, they would do the weird, not like CGI stuff through the windows to make it look like they were flying. I appreciated it.
You and you only. And so then they like take off, and they're like going to the Grand Canyon, and like, they go through this like time warp, which wasn't clear. And this is what I mean by Jeremy and Jeremy only, that like these effects, it was literally just like layover. Like
it was wild. It was like wild electrical storm in the sky, but also the Stargate SG-1 situation going through portals.
It was borderline Birdemic.
I think you need to rewatch Birdemic. It was not as bad as Birdemic. They were not using GIFs.
I haven't seen the other two Birdemics, but no, it was borderline Birdemic, but okay. I did not appreciate the graphics, because then like they land and like, I don't know what they think or how they know that they're not in the right place, because they land fine. They didn't crash land or anything. They landed, but then like none of their phones work. And I think that's how they're like, are we on a different planet? And I was like, what is the jump from my phone's not working to are we on a different planet?
Wasn't it there were like multiple suns or something?
Oh, there's like three suns. Okay, yeah. That's a good
yeah, I think that was more of a thing than the phone's not working. Yeah.
Me when my phone doesn't work.
You're like, am I on Mars?
That's me on one of those school field trips when my phone dies.
Yeah, but they're now on this planet, and then they eventually go outside and they explore. And they're climbing across all these caverns and everything.
That was like the least descriptive sentence.
Well, that's they go out of the plane. And they go out of the plane, and literally they go up the plane, and the, I remember like the scenes
the
are like
Sahara Desert.
Oh, sure.
Like, I don't know what this was.
They're going to go to the Grand Canyon, and then they're like, we're going to go to a different planet. And then they choose an arid scene for the other planet. If you had told me this was an area near-ish the Grand Canyon, I would have been like, yeah.
Wouldn't that have been iconic if that's how it had ended? It's like they had to walk like 5 feet and the Grand Canyon's like over there.
That would have been funny. They walk out of the plane. They're on this arid desert situation and they climb up some rocks. And that's like, they do that for a while, right? And there's also this
montage. They have water bottles.
They have water bottles. But then there's eventually a storm coming. A big electrical storm. Do you remember this? Where it was like the CGI was slowly creeping in towards them.
Think like Sharkboy and Lava Girl, Mr. Electric is like coming to town. Like very that's what this was.
So then Wizards of Waverly Place dad is like, yo, I got to go back to the plane because we're going to take off somehow. I don't know approach. What
the thing was, because he was like, originally, like he's like, I'm going to go back to the plane. And it wasn't clear why he was going. Oh, the tarp to collect rainwater is all I could assume was going to happen.
Yes, he was trying to get water.
Which I guess isn't a bad idea. But like, why don't you all go back? Like, why is he going back and leaving you guys here?
I don't know. Because eventually they end up in a system of caves.
Which to escape. I guess they like go in there to like hide from the rain, you know?
Well, it doesn't even seem like rain. It seems like a full on. I don't even know, like vortex of electricity coming at them, which I also thought was weird because the father's like, I'll just go over there with the tarp and I'll be fine. It's like, will you be fine?
No.
The CGI does not indicate that you will be fine.
But they're not getting wet or anything. So then they like ran to the cave, but they're still be like, we can need to get out of the rain.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go into this cave.
They go into the cave. And this is when we started realizing that the something's up with Horse Girl's necklace. We start seeing these like green lights running around them. And you're like, well, where are those coming from? And I guess those are coming from her necklace. And then the lights keep leading them to various portions of the cave and such. And there's like red lights in places where they're not supposed to go and green lights in places where they are supposed to go. Because I guess they got inspiration from traffic lights on this other planet. I don't know.
I mean, you know, it was... And then, like, one of the lights is really, like, because the red light is just pure chaos. Mm-hmm. And the green light is just, like, does relatively nothing but lead them. Yeah. And so, like, it's very weird. And also the way, like, they set this up was, like, I could not tell. Because one minute they're, like, underground by a lake trying not to fall in. And the next minute they're in a volcano. And then they're also on a ledge. It's like, wait, how did they go from, like, underground cave, like Carlsbad Canyon, to, like, some kind of, like, volcano situation.
It was also, I think, a montage moment too.
It was a montage moment. I appreciated that though. And like along the way they're like getting to bond, whatever, not sure. Very well though. Like no. That was funny because I think I don't know what this movie like I have questions. I don't know who it was made for. I don't know what morals they're trying to teach kids in this, because they spend way too much time like trying to tell this alien story. They gave the kids little to no character development. Like, at all. Like, I think they're supposed to, like, there's, like, scenes where it was supposed to be there that they did not do that with the script.
It was very bizarre, yeah. I mean, there were certain kids that we didn't hear from for long periods of time.
Right. It was really three main characters and then side characters, kind of. But then, like, any character development they had built up, which they didn't do a lot, I feel like, you know, I would even dare to say they would give them lines that would start out like the first part of the sentence seems like it was going somewhere. And then the last part would just be like nothing at all.
It would veer into like you think you know where the conversation is going. And then either one of the new lights emerges from her necklace and then they're escapading to a new location, or it just veers into a totally different conversation. Or the third option is the one kid throws up on the other kid, because that was a bit that kept happening.
Well, I think the big moment for them was really supposed to be they're in this like room and then they're seeing like visions of themselves and what I assume was their greatest fear or whatever. And I think that was supposed to be like a big moment. I was so confused. I was like, what is this? I don't know what that was. What character development was that supposed to give? Like, what did that scene give?
Introspection, coming of age, growing up. Even though some of them are 18 growing up,
it was really funny because it was also not clear what they were acting out in these memories.
No,
very weird. And then they just like walk away and they're like, wow, that changed my life. I have a whole new perspective.
Because eventually they start interacting with the aliens, and the aliens are talking about the importance of the thing, the necklace, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and they transport them to whatever ship that is. And then all of a sudden, David DeLuise is there, and he's like, oh my gosh, my daughter, and like hugs them. And he seems way less enthused to see the rest of the kids.
Oh yeah, he's like, horse girl.
Like horse girl and you guys, like the kids that I took, you know, as a CEO. And just like lazily they walk over and like hug him, and it's like awkward group hug, like the most awkward group hug I've seen. Yeah. And then the weirdest plot twist, honestly, I don't know whether to give it points because I didn't see it coming or to subtract points for just how this didn't make sense at all. But they were like, oh yeah, your mother, she was like, she was an alien, I guess is what they implied. And she like got sick, and your daughter also has a sickness. And then they tell the daughter that she has a sickness, but if she goes back with them, they can cure her.
This was like, if you are separated from your daughter forever, she can live. But if you keep her here, she has a year. What do you choose?
It was so dark because it was so dark. It was so dark for a kids movie because this poor father, like, the whole thing is how much he loves his daughter and is sad about the mom dying. And then for that to be the buildup to lead to that, like, this is like a tragedy for adults watching this. I feel like kids watching this would be like, oh yeah, she can go with the aliens. I was like, poor, like, Wizards of Waverly Place, dad.
I know, right? Yeah. That's tough. What would you do in that situation?
Oh God.
I assume you'd kid go with the aliens so that they'd live, right?
Yeah. I mean, what choice do I have at this point? It's like, oh, it would be so selfish to be like, stay another year and you're going to die. Like, that would, no, like, that's so dumb. And also, you already established that the mom was an alien. Of course you'd be like, are you saying that you would be like, no kid, stay here for a year?
No, I'm saying I would let the kid go with the aliens.
I would too. I just felt really bad for David DeLuise because it was like, aw, the whole thing that he really, honestly, this movie really said, don't give kids freedom or else they're just gonna leave. Because that's the lesson he learned, was like, I took my daughter to the Grand Canyon once. You know, he's gonna be telling all his friends that for the next 50 years.
For sure. Yeah. That was a very dark moment. And then it's also like, we eventually realized that the grandma reading the story to the two kids at the beginning is the girl who was transported to the aliens.
And it's also not clear whether, like, the kids who are, I'm not clear whether the real-time storytelling where she was telling her grandkids this was on another planet or not. Because they reference the kid being, like, fighting for planets or whatever. And I'm like, so are they aliens? Are they on a not Earth?
I imagine they're not on Earth.
That's what I would assume. But I can also see this movie having the audacity for them to just be on Earth. Because they'll, see, the thing is, if they're not on Earth, why would they be surprised that she's an alien? Yeah, it was not clear.
No, but I think it was supposed to be the big impactful moment was not somehow the whole separation from the father. It was supposed to be she is also the girl, reveal. Which I think we both were like, she's the girl, right?
Yeah,
There's the giant piece of jewelry showing through her cardigan. Like, she's definitely the girl.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the moving moment was him giving up his daughter. And then they go back and then she turns up in his kitchen as an angel. Weird moment, but she's grown up and like, I don't know, but that was supposed to be the moment. And they made it all about, I guess, this end moment where she was the person, even though that was like so predictable, but that's how the movie ended.
It was a roller coaster.
It was a roller coaster of emotions, honestly.
Yeah. What would you rate it?
I guess 6 out of 10. I enjoyed it. I think it was fun. It was funny. It was a little confusing at times. Honestly, 6 out of 10, all those 4 points being for David DeLuise. Poor guy.
I agree. I think a 6 out of 10 is fair. Honestly, at least 2 of the points are for the last 15 minutes where it was just like, what emotion are we going for? A child is being separated from her father, but also has a terminal illness, but is now an alien. But also we're panning back and she's the grandma now, but she's also an angel. Like, that was in 7 minutes, maybe?
It was, for sure.
I will say I appreciate also that this movie was not slow. There were lots of montages. It kept going.
Did feel like Sharkboy and Lava Girl for some. It was like, okay, if you mix like Sharkboy and Lava Girl with Spy Kids.
Oh.
Kind of. It's yeah. Like if like a middle school class decided to do Spy Kids and Sharkboy and Lava Girl, just the elements and the special mm-hmm. effects from it. And then just like the places they filmed and just, it was very weird. I will say the kid actors and actresses were not terrible. I've seen worse acting.
No, they were not terrible. The one thing I will say also is that when I found this movie, I thought it was going to be one of these like Christian propaganda films.
That's right. Jeremy kept telling me that. And I was like, it's not.
Everything was telling me. And all, if you look at reviews for it online, if you scroll, it's like all these Christian websites that are doing this. And looking more into it, they were wanting to develop a wholesome sci-fi film, which my question is, what are the not wholesome sci-fi children's movies that are happening? Is that a large market? Like a Sharkboy and Lava Girl,
so
the
how
devil?
How is like a girl having a terminal illness and being separated from her family a wholesome child film?
That is my question.
A wholesome
that
child
is my question.
Film? Like, no. Wholesome child film is like Willie Jamaline the Cat Cocoon. It is not, you know, this may be a bigger rant for us sometime to deal with, mm-hmm. but I would love to do a deep dive into the kids' movies we've seen because they have dark themes to them. That one kid who was gaslit for not seeing his dogs for like a week by his parents. That's oh, not yeah. wholesome energy.
That
what
is not
that?
Wholesome energy. Like, yeah, this was supposed to be like a wholesome family value sci-fi movie.
Family value? I mean, maybe they're trying to be like sacrificial love, blah, blah, blah. But like...
But usually sacrificial love is like a parent giving up their life for a child or something. It's not like we, the movie, have given the child a terminal illness because we can. But it goes away if she becomes an alien. Like, what is that exactly?
I don't know. The only thing I can think of in comparison in like a Christianity setting would be like mm-hmm. Christ dying as the Son of God. That's the only parallel to that, where it's like, okay, there's this. And they're trying to make it a Christian movie. But also, like, I don't understand what like that whole thing was. But you could argue that technically the parallel is that the father is giving up.
The father is God and the now intergalactic daughter is Jesus. That's your thesis.
I'm just saying, if you're drawing parallels, you were like, I don't see in any like literature where it's the other, the sacrificial love is this way. I'm like, well, the Bible is a big example of a child.
True. Yeah. Who's to say the friends were not the 12 disciples?
Oh my gosh.
I have so many questions. What are the aliens then?
They are, maybe they're angels. I mean, they were depicted as that kind of, but then they were also in space.
They're also in space and being chased by other space people. I was wondering, I was trying to find the whole Christianity in it, you know, like I normally do. And I...
Well, I found it for you. You're welcome.
You did find it. Thank you. Is the crystal... I was wondering, is that supposed to be like faith or something?
Oh, wait, that's good. Because they were like in the cave. They were like, oh, we just had to have faith that this like... Faith was thrown around there a couple times.
A little bit. A
couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe through like a biblical lens. How many kids were there?
6, maybe? 6 or 7?
But it felt like 12.
Right. Well, when they're in the scene where they were all living their dreams in person, that's basically doubling. 6 times 2, 12, we found it.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. I'd say go see it, right?
I would say see it with a friend, laugh about it. I would not be like, sit down, watch it. Do not watch this movie, PSA, is not for somebody who has lost a family member to like terminal illness. Has lost a mother or a child or has any kind of like trauma around those things. Do not. No. It is wild how like striking. It was like so unexpected and it's so sad. So no, this is kind of a sad movie.
Yeah, for a movie that's supposed to be wholesome, it is not particularly sensitive. So
no, not at all, actually.
No, not at all indeed. But yeah, that is our review of A World Away. It's on Amazon Prime if you want to go see it right now. So I guess now we can enter our ending segment, This or That. Is it my turn?
It is your turn, yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if you have a strong opinion about this. I feel like you will. Lighting. Do you prefer light bulbs that emit white light, like very bright white light, or like a yellowish orange tint?
Just in general?
In general, yeah. Because I have strong feelings.
Okay, white light is too like hospital vibes for me.
Okay.
I like warm light more. Okay. Also, if I'm FaceTiming someone, it gives me that like, I'm not dead look that white light gives me. I look like a corpse. So, you know, there's that. I will say though, that like, it also depends on the aesthetic. Because in some situations, like the warm light makes it look just like very, like too much sometimes. Mm. But overall, I would say I like warm light. What about you?
I'm very pro warm light in almost all situations. I don't like overhead lighting. I don't like bright light. I understand that LED lights are more efficient and they last longer. I don't like them. LED lights on cars. I need car manufacturers to stop making LED front lights. They do not need to be that bright. They are the worst. You can stop.
Especially on those Texas Edition trucks who think that they own the roads and then they have those LED bright lights. And I'm like, really, really? That's not good.
No.
How do you feel? Okay, so like if you're pro warm light, I'm pro warm light. Mm-hmm. How do we feel about the little TikTok LED change lights, whatever that people put in their room, where they're like different colors and they'll have like a remote and they're like, I'm feeling happy. It's now yellow. I'm feeling this. It's now blue. Are those like a vibe or are they like too Gen Z?
You know what they remind me of? Do you remember back in like school auctions or things a long time ago when you could buy things? They'd have these little really cheap disco things with different colors.
Little 90s disco, little disco yeah. ball.
And they would mm-hmm. turn and they would be a little disco ball of rainbow. It reminds me kind of that, but with more high tech. I don't buy it really. Like it's not something I think is great, but if you think that the lighting around you evokes your emotion to some degree, great. I don't get it.
Yeah,
though.
I mean, I think it looks pretty in some cases, but to me, it just mm-hmm. feels like I'm in a main event, like in laser tag.
Yeah.
So I'm not a huge fan of them. But, you know, I know people who love them and it's just like their thing and good for them. But are there any forms of light that are not acceptable where you're going to be like, what is this as a light?
In terms of the fixture of the light or the kind
anything,
of light?
Just any kind of light. The color of it, the like the fixture where it's like, this is weird.
I don't like very bright white light. I'd rather have it be dimmer and then like turn on lamps than have it all be bright overhead lighting.
Lamps are the real MVP. I have like 8 lamps in my room mm-hmm. and I love lamps. But what I cannot do is like, which I thought, you know, when we became influencers,
oh my God.
We started filming or whatever. I was like, you know, a lot of people film with like one of those like spotlight things.
Ring lights,
the little like,
yeah.
like light. Yeah. Those are so bright. Mm-hmm. Those are so bright. Even like having any light facing me, I cannot do. So like my light is facing the wall right now and not me because I cannot have it in my face. It's just too bright. Can't do
That's
it.
Fair.
I also think that like there's certain lighting that just does make me look like a different ethnicity. Like season one was rough. Like I looked like a different ethnicity for like every episode. So it's always like, which one makes me like look the most like what my skin tone would actually be is definitely a challenge. Because some of these, it's like, I'm pale. And I'm like,
some of them, I am a darker skin tone than you.
That is very true. And we always have like the most contrasting setups always. It's like Jeremy's is super warm. And then I'm just like in a hospital. And I'm like, okay, great. Yeah.
Yeah, lighting is important. I like warm light. I'm glad we both like warm light. And lamps are the MVP, so give lamps some love. You know,
That's our trending hashtag for the week.
Yeah. Speaking of hashtags, any socials that we should plug?
Yeah, Instagram and everything is Tyne. TikTok and everything is Tyne.
And we're good.
And it's narrowed down to two. Right, exactly.
Those are the main ones.
Mm-hmm. But those are our two main socials. And, you know, of course, can you follow us on Spotify? That's a good question for the audience. I don't know how that works.
Yes, you can follow a podcast on Spotify.
Not us sounding like we don't know what we're doing anymore. It's like, wait, what platforms are we on?
And hopefully you're enjoying the new season. I'm enjoying getting back into the rhythm of doing things again.
Yeah, it's really fun. I cannot wait. Cannot wait to start the cover art. Like, it's one of my favorite parts of doing this is doing the cover art and like the things that come out with it. I have an album on my laptop and my phone with like all of our previous cover arts, and it is just a masterpiece. It's
just... Well, I'll look forward to seeing all the cover arts that come out for the season. It'll be fun. That's all we have for this week. We won't see you or hear you, but we'll know you're there next week. And it's a lie saying we'll hear them, unless we're just hearing people. If that's a new feature, I don't know what that is.
Maybe we'll do a Spotify poll. I've been trying to tell Jeremy that we should do like a Spotify Q&A or poll, and he's like, Ruby, who wants to take a Spotify poll?
I stand by that statement.
I would take a Spotify poll.
Yeah, well, okay, great. 99.9% of the population is not wanting to go to Spotify just to take polls. We'll see. Maybe
you heard it first here. If you guys are being deprived of like having polls on disposal, I can't talk. Ooh. Editing Jeremy, take it out.
Editing Jeremy from the future here. Survey says, nah. Anyway, hope you have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.